You might have noticed that Pat and I are pretty fussy about our finances and our investments.
Yeah, a lot of junk doesn't make it past our bullshit detectors. But one thing that we've both used for many years is ShareSite. It records all dividends, franking credits, transactions, and performance easily in one place.
You can generate reports for income and capital gains, which makes tax time super easy. And ShareSite is completely free if you have 10 holdings or less.
So we've partnered with ShareSite to help support the podcast and provide all our listeners who upgrade to a paid plan a saving of 33% off the annual plan price. If you start with a free plan using our link, you'll still get that discount if you upgrade to a paid plan in the first 60 days.
Just head to ShareSite.com/fire and chill to get started.
Welcome to the Fire and Chill podcast, a collaboration between Dave from Strong Money Australia and Pat from Lifelong Shuffle, where we're going to have regular conversations about fire, investing, and living your best life. Hey everyone, today's episode was actually prompted by a question we received from a listener and we decided to make a show about it. And that is, should you DIY your entire finances or should you outsource some of it?
Interesting, because I mean, both of us, Pat, are pretty passionate about personal finance and investing. So obviously we're quite drawn to doing it ourselves, but obviously not everyone has that same level of interest or passion that we do. So I guess today we'll step out of our little bubble and kind of discuss whether everyone should take a DIY approach to managing all things related to their finances. So we'll cover like the big stuff, obviously finances being investments and financial planning, but we'll also mention some other stuff like accounting and things like that.
Yeah, we'll share how we approach this stuff and maybe some ideas for your own life and maybe a few other things which you don't normally consider but are pretty important for you to consider. But firstly, Dave, what's been going on, man? You've been rescuing turtles, taking them to the river?
Not quite. We had like one, so it's like turtle season's just starting now. So the mothers are kind of coming across from the lake to lay eggs over on this side. So we had one so far that's nested in our yard. So yeah, I'm starting to keep an eye out for turtles and being clear, like clearing different spaces in the yard to make it all kind of so that they have more spaces to lay, which is fun. What about you?
Yeah, I did a day of hard labor yesterday for the first time in a very long time, given that I'm have a cushy desk roll where I mostly use my fingers for typing, just helping my brother pour a fence footing at the front of his house. So feeling a bit stiff and a bit sore today. Got a couple of blisters on the hands, the soft, supple typing hands.
But feeling like a real worker again.
Feeling like a real worker again. First time in a long time, I do have to say, quite embarrassingly. But that was good fun. It was good to not just be a knowledge worker completely and be able to build something with my hands.
That's cool. Are you looking forward to doing some stuff like that when you move into your own place?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Even after like the full day of like hard work yesterday and feeling a bit sore today, hasn't discouraged me. Wanting to do the DIY stuff.
Good stuff.
Obviously interspersed, like I don't want to be doing it every single day and just being sore constantly, but
just little projects here and there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, let's get started, mate.
Yeah, okay. So investing and planning, choosing and implementing a strategy. Generally, this is the topic that really gets the most focus. It's about, you know, building your wealth and storing it in investments. Picking a strategy and managing those assets is pretty important. And I'd say that in the personal finance space, this gets an over-representative amount of attention.
Unhealthy almost.
Almost an unhealthy.
No, I think that's fair.
To the point where people are arguing about the difference between a 0.07% fee and a 0.1% fee. Yeah, makes almost zero difference over the course of 40 years.
Yeah. When you start getting down into the details like that, you really probably got too much time on your hands.
Yeah. You'd probably save more money spending about half an hour reviewing your insurances or your home loan or something.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, man.
Yeah.
100%. Or that time is better spent elsewhere, even if it's not, you know, saving money, just spent on life.
Spent on life, yeah. That's what we're all here for, guys. Let's do it. Spend time on life.
So in that kind of spirit, should everyone DIY their investments and their kind of financial planning in this area or not? So obviously, Pat, we both take the DIY approach to our investments. You know, we've chosen which investments to buy. We manage the portfolios ourselves. And, you know, that wasn't just done willy-nilly. I mean, we spent time researching and learning. And so we've built up a bit of, I guess, confidence and comfort in being able to manage our money and our investments by ourselves. But not everyone kind of starts at that area, so they can, I guess, they're a little bit nervous probably at first. But I suppose something important to mention here is perhaps the reason we feel so comfortable with doing it ourselves is that we've, I guess, through our learning and our research, we've realized that managing your investments can actually be incredibly simple. Don't you think that would have a big factor or a big big determination in how, I guess, how likely someone is to manage their finances themselves, like how complex or simple they make it in picking their investments and which strategy they're following?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like pulling back the curtain and realizing there's nothing behind there that you really need to see or want to see.
No, you know? Secrets.
There are no secrets back there. Perhaps crushing or destroying the myth that to have a successful investment strategy, it needs to be a complicated investment strategy. As Dave and I have said multiple times, quite the opposite is true. It's the more complex it is, the more likely it isn't successful.
Yeah. Maybe we just haven't signed up for the right online courses, mate, to teach us the secrets.
Oh, man. Even the barefoot investor got into like stock picking, didn't he? Like he sold a blueprint about which stocks to buy and which ones to sell.
I believe so. I believe he had like a annual paid subscription where they would cover, I think, a large amount of stocks maybe and tell you which ones to buy or whatever. I was never in it, but I'm pretty sure that's what was happening behind the scenes.
Oh, my goodness. And he was like the epitome of simplifying your investments and breaking it down and explaining it to the average person. And even he or his team resorted to offering stock picking advice. It's almost unimaginable.
Mm. I'm not sure how it went. Like, I'm not sure how the members found that service. I mean, maybe it was good and maybe they liked it. So not really sure. But you're right, though. It is kind of, it is a little bit perplexing when you've got, on one hand, you're trying to simplify things, but on the other hand, you're making it more complicated than it needs to be. So that's a little bit perplexing, I guess. You should, if you're in the spirit of simplifying things, I guess, like we're trying to do here, we should stick to that kind of spirit and keep things as simple as possible for people.
Is there anyone who's uncorruptible? Seriously. I don't think you can say with a straight face that was a good idea for the audience that he reached, like to offer a stock picking service.
I suppose it depends how you're, I don't know, man. It depends how you're judging it, I guess.
Oh, I'm judging it with, you know, what's best for the average punter.
Yeah. I don't know what their track record was like.
It almost doesn't matter.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Well, it does. You should be sure just because you happen to have a good track record. So that could have been luck.
Yeah, but you can't just then make a value judgment and say, well, it turned out worse for the subscription members because that might not actually be the case because maybe they... because they signed up for it, maybe they enjoyed it, maybe they got value from it, and then when you shut it down, maybe they were disappointed. So I don't think we can say that they were hard done by or that they didn't receive a good service or whatever. I don't think it's quite as black and white as that. I get what you're saying, like on average, people are better off just buying an index fund, and he would agree with that, I'm sure, these days. I'm pretty sure I've seen him write such a thing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's quite as black and white as that, as good or bad.
Yeah, well, I think maybe we're going to have to agree to disagree. Like, I judged the decision based on the information that was available at the time the decision was made, not necessarily at the results you happened to get at the end of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure when he started that. I think it was grinding for a pretty long time.
No, fair enough, but the knowledge about active investing and index funds has been around for decades.
Mm.
So he definitely didn't start it decades ago. And he's in the field, like this is his field. He should be up to date with all that sort of research, especially if his audience is a keep it simple, this is how you manage your finances, DIY it,
Man, we're way off topic.
Bit of a segue. We're reviewing Barefoot Investor.
You're trying to bring it back to the topic, mate.
Yeah, okay.
No, so back to what we were saying before, I guess, like the reason we feel comfortable doing all this ourselves is because we've decided to invest in a simple way because that's the easiest and most arguably the most effective way to invest. So if you do that, then managing your own investments, whoever you are, is really quite simple because you can make it simple. You don't necessarily need to outsource that at all. You don't need to rely on like the trust of others or outside help.
No, not at all. And you don't have to pay fees to outside people. You don't have to trust them. You don't have to have like this sort of continuity of advisors. So you might trust one now, say, but in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, they might retire or they might decide they want a new career. So then you start getting into this issue where it's not necessarily just finding a good advisor now. It's how do you ensure you have that continuity over your lifetime while the advisors can come and go and do their own thing.
Yeah, that's a good point because I suppose typically you're working with an advisor who's much older than you and so they're going to be retiring at some point and you might not necessarily want to move to someone else because you like that relationship that you've built.
Yep.
If that's the case, you know, so that's, yeah, that can be a problem.
Can definitely be a problem.
So when does outsourcing any of this investment stuff actually make sense? Is there any possible use cases there for not using the DIY approach to investments? Think hard, Pat.
I'm trying. Should I declare my bias? I think we already did.
I think we already know.
We're both heavy DIY. Yeah.
We already know.
I'm sure there are people out there through which good sound financial advice would be very beneficial to them. And certainly if they don't have the knowledge or they don't have the time or they just, you know, don't have the ability to sift through this sort of stuff and create a coherent picture in their minds of how they should do things. Mm-hmm. Or for example, if they're just a very anxious or panicky person, maybe they need, you know, that constant reassurance.
Yep.
Or they just need like, they need a step between them and the sell button.
Yeah.
Just one step apart.
Yeah, that's a good point to make because when you're doing it yourself, you're in control of it yourself, meaning if your emotions get the better of you, you could sell at the wrong time. So having a circuit breaker in between that kind of stops you from selling, someone to talk you off the ledge essentially, someone to kind of help you talk through the situation that might be happening at the time and get you to stick with your long-term plan. That can be pretty valuable.
Yeah, that can be valuable. You could also look at robo-advisors if you're maybe not that panicky sort of person, but you also don't want to like create your own portfolio allocations. Let's say you just want to hit the buy button and go for it. But we should do an episode on robo-advisors soon.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if everything we're going to say is going to be totally positive, but
we should do it anyway because we've been asked this a couple of times actually.
Yeah, we should. Yeah.
Yeah. So if this is the case, you don't want to be... I mean, there is use cases for having some other party help you with your investments, but you don't want to be paying. I mean, we talked a little bit about this before, Pat, but you don't want to be paying like $5,000 for some fancily packaged financial plan, which is just a bunch of graphs and personal details and random comments thrown in, and then having to pay like 1% per annum on top of that to invest your money into some convoluted portfolio. It's just, there's so many red flags. I mean, I've had emails from people that use advisors or have done in the past, and they essentially point me to the fact that they're paying what is almost an arm and a leg for advice that is quite complicated, really. They're often put into portfolios of 10 or more funds, and often those funds are like expensive, high-fee active funds, and sometimes the strategy doesn't even make sense. They'll explain it to me, and it's just so like convoluted and complicated. So no wonder people feel like they need to stick with this advisor because when they put it together, they think, okay, they kind of get talked into it. Okay, this kind of makes sense right now. But then they're left with the feeling of like, well, if I want to leave, I have no idea what to do because all of this is, there's so many moving parts. I don't know where to start. How do I do this myself? Do I need all of these funds? And they just become stuck to that advisor because it becomes too difficult to leave because it seems and sounds more complicated than it really needs to be. And so there's a big conflict of interest there that kind of pops up. The advisor wants to make it complicated so that they are necessary and the client can't leave. And the client obviously wants it to be simple and understandable and to know what's going on at all times. So it's a bit of a battle there sometimes.
You know, it's actually even worse than that. It's not just like an emotional and knowledge barrier. Advisors use wrap platforms where you have to be an advisor to have access to the wrap platform. And if you're a personal investor with that advisor, you can't then have the login access to that wrap platform to be able to DIY it. You would have to sell out and then rebuy elsewhere and incur capital gains.
So that can't be transferred to like a broker or something like that?
No, it has to get out of the wrap.
Wow, that is
worse.
It's
not like Chess sponsored. No.
Oh man, that's terrible.
It is terrible. Or you need to find another advisor that uses the same wrap platform.
Yeah.
To be able to. Oh, so it's an actual like real barrier to leaving.
Yeah. Because imagine you've been there for 5 years, 7 years. You might have, and you've got a decent amount of money in there. You might have like $10,000 or more in capital gains that you might owe if you want to switch and start doing it yourself. I mean, it could make sense to pay that tax because of the huge ongoing savings from switching to like a simple DIY strategy.
Yep.
But that's still a huge hurdle to go through emotionally and financially.
Yep. Yep. Tough. Really bad stuff out there.
You want to add to that at all?
Yeah. Like it just makes it really hard to recommend like going to a full service financial advisor for those reasons. And the thing is, at least in some way, you need to understand investments in some small way to be able to judge whether your advisor is, you know, pulling your leg or giving you a good service. So going with an advisor doesn't like necessarily mean you can totally be hands off and walk away from it and they're going to manage it in the background. You still need to be involved. You need to be able to judge whether your advisor is doing a good job, and you just need to keep that knowledge there. If anything, like we said, happens to your advisor and you can't find a good one that you're happy with, you need to be able to take over.
I think that's the dangerous part, is that once you go down this road, if you don't have any fundamental knowledge of what's happening and why, people go to advisors, one of the reasons is for peace of mind. But can you really have peace of mind when you think it's being taken care of, but you don't actually know what's happening or why? It's not all that understandable to you. Do you really get peace of mind from that? I would doubt it.
Yeah, I agree. Perhaps the quote unquote good advisors would explain it to you in a simple and straightforward way.
Yeah.
That would help you understand it.
I'm sure there is good advisors out there who don't charge too much and who also put people into simple investment portfolios as well.
Yeah. And I was talking to Dave a bit earlier about this. Like I saw one of these, I think they're called statements of financial advice things that, I don't know, you hear all the time, like advisors saying, oh, that's, you know, that's what you get and that sort of professionalism. I saw one of these things that apparently costs between $3,000 and $5,000, and it was just like 50 pages of nonsense. It was just 90% copy and paste. They basically take one of these statements of financial advice between all their clients and they change maybe 2 or 3 pages of personal details in this thing, and they sell it off for $3,000 or $5,000, and maybe like another 2 hours of face-to-face time with the client, and maybe 2 hours of editing this document, and that apparently costs $3,000 to $5,000 before they start charging you for implementing the statement of financial advice.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my goodness, like why? And we're going to get some hate on this episode.
Oh, that's fine. Doesn't matter, man. Shouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's okay to pay a decent amount of money for a valuable service, but that's not what a lot of people are getting.
Yeah.
Like we said, they're getting charged an arm and a leg for like a complicated portfolio that they can't barely understand themselves. They can't get out of it easily, and it's not actually adding value to their returns. So they're paying all this money for very little value in return. Like in other industries, you might be paying a lot of money, but you're getting valuable service. Like you're benefiting more than you're paying. That's the whole reason you pay the money in the first place.
Yep. It's tough, man. It's so tough.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know, man. Don't know. But I suppose, all right, so on the other side, planners can help you kind of map out your goals. They can help you sort out some insurances as well, and maybe budgeting and tax stuff that you might not be too aware of yourself. And then there's also a lot of super rules that they would be more acutely aware of and down with the details of, that most people, even myself, wouldn't be up to speed with because the shit changes so much.
And also stuff like maximizing the pension. And we all know, like, this is another fetish, isn't it? It's like maximizing pension. Don't get me wrong, I understand it. If the government's going to give you money, why not maximize it? But yeah.
But that, it gets taken too far, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah. Hey, you should spend $250,000 upgrading your house so you can then become eligible for the pension.
You
hear stuff like that all the time.
Yeah,
it's like, but what if you didn't need or didn't want to upgrade your house?
But see, but who doesn't want to do that? Who doesn't want to upgrade their house, mate? Everyone.
Yeah. I don't, yeah. And then you'll get it back when you sell your house anyway, and it could be an inheritance for the kids while the government gives you money to live off.
Yeah, rather than missing out, in quotes, missing out on the free money from the government.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. People will spend $200,000 to get an extra $10,000 per year off the government.
Yeah, it's probably second only to the fetish of tax.
Reducing tax,
optimizations, yeah.
Pretty much. Okay, so bottom line with advisors, you need to know at least like how you're invested and why, and it has to actually make sense to you. It needs to be easy to understand. If it isn't easy to understand, then that's probably a big red flag that the advisor might not be right for you. You might want to find a new one. And remember, keeping your investing simple doesn't only mean it makes it simple for you. It also makes it simple for your partner. So we don't like to think morbidly too often, but you have to remember eventually you may pass away, something might come of you, and having that succession planning in place so that your partner can pick up all of those loose pieces and be able to run with them with not too much difficulty is something that is really important to think about, because you definitely don't want to leave this overly complex, hard to manage, hard to understand portfolio, which maybe you are interested enough and involved enough to understand. You don't want to leave that to your partner or your children, let's say.
Yeah. And not only, I suppose, if something bad happens, but even just on a like month-to-month, year-to-year basis, you want them to understand what's happening so that they're as invested as you are in what you're kind of what you're working towards together, because there's no point only you understand what's happening and only you kind of, you know what I mean, can manage it. That's a little bit like not very fair, I think. I think it's better if both parties understand how it's all working and where your money's going and why and how to manage it in a kind of simple way.
Yes. And understanding really helps with not panic selling. So you don't want to get into an argument with your spouse when the next, global financial crisis rolls around because they don't understand and maybe they're panicking. You want them to understand along the way so that when that does happen, everyone's cool and calm.
Maybe you need an advisor so they can tell you to sell before the crisis, Pat.
Surely there is no one who still does that. Go to cash. Go all to cash. But yeah, just talking about those other things advisors can do for you.
I mean, I suppose the thing is some of this stuff like the taxes and the super and the pension, kind of optimizing all those things, I suppose, can be quite a lot to take in and a lot to learn by yourself.
Yep.
So it can make sense to get to pay for some help with that kind of just even understanding how that stuff is working. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you can find online these days as well, but a lot of people need someone to kind of simplify it for them in real life as well. But I do think, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, Pat, but I do think that a lot of the, I guess, fear or worry that comes with someone managing their own investments comes from thinking that the financial world and the investing world is a complex and complicated place.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I guess it is a bit of a complicated place, but that doesn't mean that you need to invest in a complicated way for things to work out. So do you think that that's part of it?
Yeah. It's intimidating just to jump into it and get into it and learn. Like it does feel too complicated, too high a mountain to climb.
I guess because there's a big, it's a big industry, and there's so many different options and so many people saying different things. And yeah, you can see where people get overwhelmed at the very beginning with that.
Yep.
For sure.
Yeah, definitely.
But we're trying to help a little bit in this kind of area, you know, like just to simplify and cut out the nonsense and just give people some easy kind of takeaway answers of what they can do and what to ignore, which is most of it.
Yeah. Overwhelmingly, most of it can be ignored.
Mm.
So there are advisors that can help you. I think if I were ever to see an advisor, which I don't think I would anytime soon, if ever, I'd try to find one that I could just have a single or a couple of consultations with and pay for them per hour or per consultation or whatever the fee structure is. I wouldn't want to get into paying $5,000 for a statement of financial advice or paying ongoing implementation fees or investing through them. I would never do that. It would always be pay for the advice, go away and invest myself.
And if you need more advice, come back and pay for that again. I think that's a good way to do it. Like, just pay for what you need at the time. Don't commit and tie yourself to that person.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. How about budgeting, Dave? Do you need help with budgeting? Do you want to see someone to help you budget?
Sometimes, mate, sometimes.
I don't think you're really good at it, man. I don't know.
Nah.
Just have a problem with spending.
Nah, I had a $5 coffee the other day. That blew the budget, mate, for the week.
Oh, I'm thinking of getting one right after this podcast.
Oh, you're a born and bred consumer, mate.
Oh, love it. Simple joys in life, right?
Nah, so I think I'm not sure if we've spoken about this before, actually, but I don't think either of us actually do or have or use a budget. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I don't budget.
Yeah. Have you ever?
I think I've tried to, but then I've realized that I don't like it.
Did you make like a little, would it be like a little spreadsheet or something that's like, okay, such and such, $100 a week, such and such, $50 a month and whatever, you
I'm
did that?
I'm sure I have in the past. I'm sure I've tried it. But then, like I said, I just realize I don't like it and then I just stop it.
Yeah. I've never really been into that either. Other than just deciding not to buy stuff that we don't really need, which is always, I would say, the right way to go about it. Other than that, what I would do is pretty much once a year or maybe twice a year, I would write a list of where like all our money was going, and I would write this big list, and I'd do like old school pen and paper. And I would essentially just look at each category or each area that we're spending money in, and I'm thinking, okay, how can we get the best out of that category and reduce the cost at the same time? Like, is this expense or is this amount that we're spending in this area, is it really worth it? Can we achieve basically the same thing at a lower cost? And pretty much I did that every year or like twice a year, and every single year our spending came down and our lifestyle was basically the same. Did you do anything like that?
Yeah. I track spending, not really with a specific goal in mind, just to make sure things aren't getting out of hand. Just be like, or pick up red flags. Like, oh, last year I spent $2,000 on takeaway. This year I spent $12,000 on takeaway. What the hell's going on? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I've been eating Thai food from the local Thai restaurant 5 times a week. That must be it.
Do they factor Uber Eats into the CPI?
Probably not.
Maybe that's why inflation, that's too low, mate. It's not accurate because it doesn't include 5 times Uber Eats.
Oh, Uber Eats. I almost never use Uber Eats, eh?
Nah, I don't.
No.
I have, but I have, but it's not a habit.
No, but I think, I don't know, Uber Eats has like democratized the whole restaurant delivery business, but I hear from plenty of restaurant owners that Uber just takes a huge cut of their profit. So I always try and ring the restaurant and just get them to deliver it themselves.
Oh, okay. Are they allowed to do both?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe if you sign up to Uber Eats, you can't then deliver yourself as well. You can do both.
Oh, that would be next level draconian stuff, wouldn't it? Jesus.
Okay. That's a good move, Pat.
Good guy, Pat.
Good move. Yeah, I would think that they would resent those costs but then feel obligated to participate at the same time.
Essentially, they have to play the game that's dealt to them, basically.
Yeah, kind of like shops and Afterpay.
Yeah.
They probably don't want to pay Afterpay, you know, that 3% or whatever they're paying, but then they're thinking, well, kind of everyone else is doing it. So, yeah, we might get more business if we do it. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, let's move on before this turns into a 2-hour marathon.
Yes.
Should you DIY your own accounting, Dave?
Maybe. So I think it really depends on how complicated your situation is and how much you enjoy or hate dealing with numbers, I guess, or finances. So accounting itself is actually not that complicated. Like a lot of it is basically going to annoy some people, but it's basically like data entry.
Yep.
So if you're just an employee and maybe you receive some dividends from your investments, then your taxes, it's not complicated at all. And the online, we might have spoken about this before, but the online tax system now to you is very user-friendly. Like it's very, very easy to use. I'm surprised. And it seems like every year it continues to kind of get better or get easier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you just invest simply and you're an employee and then you just wait till like September to do your tax return.
You almost don't have to do your tax return.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much everything is pre-filled. You just log in and you're like, oh, yeah, that all looks pretty much right. Yeah, tick. Yeah, that was about, yeah, that was my income. Yeah, those are my dividends. Yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
Put in some deductions if you have them and then hit submit.
Mm.
And that's tax.
Yeah. So simple, man. Because, I mean, your work thing is probably already there and it's probably spot on. You just have to confirm with your own whatever it is, PAYG statement, and then also like your dividends.
Oh, Dave.
You can check your dividend statements or your whatever share site account. What?
You're exposing your old retiree self here.
Why? You don't get them anymore?
PAYG statements are no longer required for income employees. It's all automatically uploaded to MyTax and it's
Yeah. But don't you get a copy of it so you can check
it?
It's no longer
essential to give out physical copies.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't got one of those in 2 or 3 years, I think.
Do they email it to you?
No, nothing.
It's
the electronic upload is now the government mandated thing.
Okay. So I'm way out of the loop.
Way out of the loop, buddy.
Oh, well. Fair enough. So we didn't actually say, but we both do our own tax, don't we, Pat?
Yes, we do.
And so I actually used to outsource my tax because I thought, okay, well, I have some properties, so it's a little bit more complicated than just dividends. But it turns out that it's not all that complicated. I mean, it is a little bit, but not really. I mean, and the thing is, I was quite happy outsourcing it because we have quite a few properties and it was becoming like a lot. So I was happy to not do it, just to hand it over. But we actually had this accountant who was charging us a fair bit. Like it was quite a big accounting firm and combined it was costing us, I think the last year that we did it was like over $1,500 because there's like multiple properties. We had both had shares and it was just like quite a big thing to deal with, I guess. And on the last tax return, first of all, I have like frustrations like explaining to them, okay, this loan's for this property, this one's for this one. You got to explain it to them so that they know what's going on, which is fine. But then like he was getting a little bit confused because different loans for different properties and whatever. And then also could you have to check it afterwards, obviously, to make sure they did the right thing. And he missed a loan for like $12,000 worth of interest or something like that. And I'm thinking, holy shit, man, if lucky I checked it, because imagine I don't check it, like, oh yeah, he knows what he's doing. And then I just put it in. And then what's that? That's missing out on perhaps like $4,000 or something like that. So it just became too onerous and too kind of taxing mentally. And I just thought, I'm just going to do it myself and see how hard it is. Surely it can't be that hard. And it wasn't. It wasn't that hard. So I've just done it myself ever since.
Was it more work to explain it and double check that he did it right than it was to do it yourself?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. The first year was like a little bit confusing because I was, you know, this was, oh man, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago now, and the online tax system wasn't quite as good, wasn't quite as user-friendly, so it wasn't that great, but I managed to get it done in like a few days or whatever, and I was thinking, oh, that wasn't that bad, I'll do it again, and every year it's just gotten easier, so yeah, definitely less hassle than trying to explain our situation to someone.
Yeah, and they've got like 100 clients just swirling around in their head, 100 client situations.
Yeah.
So of course it's going to be hard for them.
And the thing is, like, they're not taking the responsibility for your tax return. You still sign a document that says, I am 100% essentially responsible for everything in here. And you know what I mean? If anything's wrong, it's my fault, not the tax agent's fault.
I don't think that would stand up if you took them to account for it. But anyway.
I don't know. But essentially, they're just putting in the data that you give them and just sending it back to you to sign. Then there's nothing like special going on there most of the time.
Well, some people think like tax agents know like secret deductions, like they're going to get you a better tax return.
The loopholes, mate, the loopholes.
The tax loopholes, like somehow like they're going to do it and they're going to find you all these additional deductions.
Oh, so we're just going to the wrong place.
Oh, that must be it. And I've always looked at that with like a confused face. It's like, what do you think they're doing? Like, do you think they're magic? Like, they're going to find things that you've spent money on that you haven't specifically given them and told them you've spent money on it.
You know, the one that cracks me up is where people complain about their tax refund or lack thereof. They're like, oh, the accountant, I didn't get tax back or whatever. Well, what deductions did you have?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I didn't have any. Well, what do you expect? What do you want there? Like,
oh, tax accountants aren't magic. They're not going to make tax disappear.
If you get no tax return and no tax bill, that means you paid the correct amount of tax.
Yeah, it's perfect.
You're not supposed to get like a $2,000 refund every year just because.
Yeah. Ah. Oh, man.
Moving on. All right. So that's accountants, mate. So how can people make it easier to DIY their whole financial life? Let's give some tips rather than just saying what we don't like about outsourcing. Let's give people some options and some tips.
Personally, I have always invested in a way that it keeps things simple. I don't like the use of complicated tax structures like trusts and company trustees and bucket companies and all this. What were you talking about before, Dave? Like Cayman Islands, snake and ladders, and like routing your money through. Hate that stuff. I have it's very simple 4-fund portfolio, all administered in a joint account. Very easy, very simple tax-wise to do. Yeah, it's great.
And so, yeah, the biggest thing that you can do to make this DIY approach much, much easier on yourself is to just have a very simple portfolio. You could even have a portfolio of like 1 or 2 funds and that's it. And that's all you have to do. I mean, that is going to get the job done. There's nothing magical that you're like really missing out on. You can, and just, I suppose, to elaborate, that's just not like 1 or 2 any funds. That would be like something like the Vanguard High Growth Fund or like the, what's the other one?
The Beta Shares High Growth Fund.
Do you say Beta Shares or Beta Shares? What's the correct pronunciation?
I say Beta. I don't know what the correct one is, but I say Beta.
We should find out. But yeah, the other one, like DHHF, which is just like very similar, but like an all share portfolio of Aussie shares, global shares, everything really, all in one little parcel. You can buy that and that's it.
That's totally fine. That'll get the job done.
But then I guess there's more to our finances than that. So there's also like bank accounts, super accounts, all the rest of it. So another thing that is probably good to do here to make it easier on yourself is to minimize the number of accounts you have. So we spoke a little bit about Barefoot before, and I just reminded me here, like he recommends to have, I'm not sure how many accounts, but it's like quite a few, but I've never really been a fan of that approach either. So not that it's wrong. It's just, it's just never been for me. So if you simplify your accounts in such a way, it's going to make your managing your whole financial life much easier. So you can have maybe 1 account or maybe 2 accounts, and then you can just have 1 broker account and 1 super account. You don't need like...
Can I hear this straight, Dave? Are you saying that because I decided to do my brokerage through Commonwealth Bank, so I've only got like 1 platform, you're saying that might be beneficial and worth paying a bit more for to simplifying your investment life?
Maybe. If you feel like it is, then maybe it is. If you feel like having an extra an account elsewhere would complicate your financial life, then sure. But I'm really talking about here like having one bank account instead of five.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's what I'm really getting at here. Yeah, you know, just cutting out the nonsense and like just simplifying things a bit, you know?
I agree. It feels just like in barefoot investors' vein, like sometimes people feel like they have to electronically move the money from one of their savings accounts to the other savings account just so it can help them keep track of which bucket it's in. But I don't feel that that's necessary at all. And probably because we don't budget, like we don't necessarily set aside money for certain things like that.
That's why it works for people, because if that money's in their normal account, then it just disappears. They'll just spend it. So they need the other account that's, okay, this is my savings, this is my future holiday money, or this is whatever. So it can work. Like it's not, I'm not saying it doesn't work. It's just that when you approach your finances in a way that Pat and I do, you really only need, I guess, one account, and you just, your spending is already naturally under control. So you don't have to really worry about it and have money diverted to all these different places.
Yeah.
Mate, Barefoot's going to sue you, you know? Or maybe he'll sue the show. So this is the last episode.
Have I said anything that was non-factual or disparaging? Maybe disparaging.
Maybe disparaging.
Oh. Yeah, okay. I think he's making too much money off that stock picking service to worry about Fire and Chill.
I think it's been shut for a few years, I think.
Oh, he went back to financial advice. So he had to shut down because of conflicts of interest or something.
Yeah, but I think it's more like voluntary financial counselling.
Oh, okay, yep.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting paid to...
Good guy, Scott. Yeah. He went down, but then he just went up, like voluntary counselling. That sounds like a pretty good thing to do.
I think around the bushfire time.
Oh, yep.
He wanted to help people who were facing kind of trouble in that kind of situation where their life was
falling apart because of that.
Essentially torn apart, I guess. Yeah.
Not bad.
So that's pretty good.
That is good. Okay. We are at talking about your spouse. We talked a bit about this.
Okay.
What if your spouse isn't interested?
Yeah. So if they're not interested whatsoever, it can become a little bit tricky. So you just want to run your finances in a way that they can just, if they're not interested in being involved, at least they know what's happening in the background and why it's happening. And so obviously if you're making things as simple as possible in terms of your accounts and your super and your investments, then it's much, much easier for them, if they have no interest in this stuff, to kind of understand what's happening. They might be like, yeah, okay, I don't really care, but I do get what's happening at least. So
you don't want to have to draw them like a 50-node flow chart about the different ways the money is moving. Like
20-slide PowerPoint presentation.
No, yeah, I agree, of course. Always thinking to the future, always.
And so I guess the final thing to point out there is like as long as you maintain like a commitment to investing and have like a strong savings habit, you're going to do pretty well. So you don't need to, we've said this before, but you just don't need to do anything fancy at all.
Yeah. Making things complicated and fancy is like the greatest success of the, you know, financial industry.
Yeah.
Seriously, because it's, when we say unnecessary, we're not just saying, oh, it would help, but it's not needed. We're saying in most cases, it's probably detrimental to your success. Like when we say unnecessary, we mean it's totally unnecessary. It'll do you no good. It'll probably not do you any good at all. It'll probably do the opposite.
It's going to subtract value.
So doing things simply, straightforward. As Dave wrote a nice little Buffett quote here for us to share with everyone. Buffett once said, you don't get extra points for degree of difficulty.
I like that one.
Which is pretty funny. It's pretty apt. And even him, who's a pretty successful investor, he knows it and he strives for simplicity as well. And he's done a bit of succession planning for his missus. You've heard about that, haven't you?
Yeah.
He says that, yeah, when he passes away, his will has just basically said something along the lines of put it all in an index fund.
Yeah.
For his heirs. So that's good.
Pretty interesting. So even though he might be investing in an active and somewhat, I mean, it's not that complicated, but somewhat complicated way right now, he's more than happy to, and that's what he's recommended for quite a while, for almost everybody is better off just investing in a super simple way and buying index funds. So all right, let's just give a few points on when to consider getting help quickly. Because maybe, you know, maybe we haven't convinced people all the way to DIY, mate. Because there is cases where getting some advice can make sense.
Yeah, so maybe around super, when you're planning on putting money in or taking money out, probably a good time to do a lot of research or ask someone who might know a bit more. And this obviously ties into not just super, but ties into pension and a few other things that might complicate the situation. If you want to make sure, you know, if something happens to you, then you have someone you can trust to manage the investment side of things. Maybe, yeah, your spouse is not capable or not interested still, but
some people just have zero interest.
Oh, it's bloody hell. So tough. And families can get quite complicated as well, like family affairs. So it's not necessarily just finding someone else that can take care of it for them until, yeah.
And I suppose if you have a complex personal situation, you might want to get some outside thoughts on how you might want to go about it. Maybe if you have a business that you run and you have like some legal risk or something, you might want to get some help on and thoughts on how to like help structure your investments to protect your wealth and how you should kind of own them essentially.
Yeah. But what we said before still stands, like you should still really understand what's going on. And if at all possible, try not to do anything through an advisor specific platform or through the advisor. Try and pay for service, so to speak.
Mm. I think if you only do one thing yourself in your life, it should probably be your finances. I don't know what you think about that, Pat. It just affects your life so much that I feel like it's dangerous is the right word, but it's too risky to kind of outsource it, I think. You want to understand as much of it as possible, because outsourcing it doesn't actually fix the problem. You're not guaranteed of a successful outcome whatsoever.
Yeah, it's tough. It's one of those things that is cumulative over your lifetime. So it's unique in that way. And usually when we get professional advice for things, it's about a very specific momentary situation. So like, you know, you go, your car breaks down, you go to a mechanic, you pay them to fix it, you drive away, done. You know, you get sick, you go to a doctor, you pay them to fix it, or the government pays them to fix it. Maybe there's a plan to continue like your health afterwards, but you know, you follow the plan, you go away. But with wealth, it literally spans your entire lifetime. Like if it's put in the wrong place to begin with, and then you have to get it and move it or move it around, it makes things really difficult.
Yeah. It affects your life in so many different ways.
Yep, it does.
And I suppose if you're not doing it yourself and you're not really totally sure what's actually happening and you think someone's taking care of it, that can be pretty dangerous, because I don't think you'll ever be comfortable with it. You won't ever have that kind of peace of mind because you don't actually know what's happening. You don't have that like fundamental understanding.
Yeah, I agree. So if you really want some advice, try and find someone who will give it to you on a per hour basis or a per consultation basis, and see what questions you can have answered, what sort of financial plans you can come up with on the spot. But yeah, paying $5,000 for statement of financial advice plus then a 1% annual fee is just like red flags, alarm. And mind you, that 1% fee is usually on top of the MERs of the high, like the high cost.
That's the baseline fee, mate. That's just to get started. That's just like
that's
clipping the ticket as soon as your money enters their universe.
Yeah, exactly. And then they put you in the high fee investment funds. Yeah. So that stuff just has to like red flags. Do as much of it as you can yourself. It really can be simple. Just dedicate a little bit of time to understanding what's going on and sort of different investments and different ways of purchasing. It can be a bit intimidating, but you know, there's plenty of online resources.
But you have to, like, it can be simple, but you have to also let it be simple. Don't be like lured in by something that sounds smart and sounds sexy and is, oh, it's just a little bit juicier than this boring, shit over here. I'm going to do that because it's probably better.
Yeah. Your investments should be boring. That's the best way for your investments to be.
Yeah.
If they're boring, you know you're doing something right.
But, mate, we're probably preaching to the choir here, don't you think? I mean,
yeah, yeah. Like, these are our people, Dave.
Yeah, these are our people. Because I guess if people aren't comfortable with handling their finances, then they might not be listening to this podcast.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe some people get recommended it because hopefully it's an easy and laid-back discussion and we're not too technical.
True. But we did get asked this question, so I thought it was a good topic to cover in its entirety because there is a few kind of moving parts to it, not just investing.
Yes, there is. Definitely.
By the way, if you do have like a topic suggestion that you would like us to discuss, you can email those through to us at fireandchillpod@gmail.com. And so we hope you enjoyed today's show. If you did and you like what we're doing here, drop us a 5-star rating on your podcast app or just tell a friend about the show. We really appreciate that. All right, have a great week and we'll talk to you next time.